Translation by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. After seeing the temple of Jagannath from a distant place, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu immediately became ecstatic. After offering obeisances to the temple, he began to dance in the ecstasy of love of God. Purport: the word Dola refers to the temple where the Supreme Personality of Godhead is situated. The present temple of Jagannath Puri was constructed by King Ananga Bhima. Historians say this temple must have been constructed at least 2,000 years ago. During the time of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the small building surrounding the original temple had not been constructed, nor was the high platform in front of the temple present during the time of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Srila Prabhupada ki. Om Gyanati Mirandasya Gyananjana Shlakya Chakshuram Mitam Devatasmai Shri Gurave Nama Nama Om Shri. This is the start of a new chapter of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes. And we've been hearing recently about the pastime where Nityananda Prabhu broke the sannyas staff into three places and threw it in this river. And this river is called the Danda Bhanga Nadi. Of course, that pastime still is to continue after these few verses. But this, of course, follows the pastime of the Sakshi Gopal story. And that, in turn, follows the pastime of Madhavendra Puri. So, how did we get to this point, really? Lord Chaitanya is on his way to Puri. But why is he going to Puri? Who can remember why he's going to Puri? Yes, his mother told him to. And like all good boys, he's listening to his mother. Of course, Lord Chaitanya is the Supreme Lord himself. And he doesn't always listen to his mother. Certainly in the past times, as Lord Krishna, he often caused Mother Yashoda a lot of headache, as all naughty boys do. But sometimes the Lord will accept an instruction out of affection and he will follow it. And other times he won't, because he's the Supreme Independent Lord. So Mother Sachi had this conversation with him. And she was asking, what are you doing, taking sannyas, all of these things? And Mahaprabhu was asking for permission. And at the end she said, you are the Supreme Lord, you will do whatever you want anyway. So I will somehow try to please you. And so this pastime, had the decision for Mahaprabhu to go to Puri, is in opposition to his own desire. His own desire was to go to Vrindavan. Because he had taken initiation, now he's taken sannyas in Katwa, and he wants to go to Vrindavan. But his mother said that, how will I bear separation from you if you go to Vrindavan? So it is far better that you make your residence in Puri. Because Puri is not so far, and there is a regular transfer of Vaishnavas between Puri and Navadvip. And in the traditional times, people would travel. The pilgrims would be regularly visiting Puri and then they would be coming back to the Mayapur area. So she said, at least this way I can get some news of you and I won't feel too much separation. So Mahaprabhu accepted that request, and he accepted it because it also served his own plan, his own supreme plan, to set up the initial preaching entries in the Puri area. And then to launch from Puri and to embark on his South India trip, which is what he proceeded to do after that. So Mahaprabhu was in Puri, but remembering these dealings with Mother Sachi, and you can just imagine Mother Sachi, when she first saw Lord Chaitanya in his attire as sannyasi at the house of Advaita Acharya, she was very upset. It's very sad that he has given up his household life, given up his beautiful wife, and he's now adopted this mood of a mendicant. And she'd also, of course, gone through that pain before with Vishwarup, the elder brother. Now that itself led to a little bit of a, how can we say, a little bit of tension between her and Lord Chaitanya. So that's perhaps one occasion when he wasn't very pleased with his mother. Because her son Vishwarup would go and associate with Advaita Acharya. And he would hear Bhagavatam from him, and he would hear many items of spiritual wonder. And at an early age, I think he was around 12 or something like that, he took sannyas, and he never returned. So that heartbreak was always there with her. Now she was seeing that Lord Chaitanya was spending a lot of time with Advaita Acharya also. And she was thinking, this is same thing is going to happen again. So she said, this Advaita Acharya, he's Dvaita. He's not actually Advaita. He's Dvaita. We'll call him dual. You know, he's causing me pain and suffering. And so Mahaprabhu wasn't very happy with that. Of course, internally, he knows that there's nothing wrong with his mother's intentions. But externally, he was making the point that one cannot be a bona fide devotee if they offend or think offensively about another devotee. So while he was giving his darshan to all the devotees and he was giving them prema, giving them love of Godhead, he said, I will not give love of Godhead to Mother Sachi because she's an offender. She has offended Advaita Acharya, so I will not do so. All the devotees are thinking, how can this be the case? This is Mother Sachi, the mother of the Lord of the universe. Please be merciful to her. And so anyway, they instructed her that you should beg forgiveness from Advaita Acharya. Because after all, that is the person to whom the offense has been conducted. So they brought Advaita Acharya there, and Mother Sachi, thinking this is my chance to offer obeisances. And Advaita Acharya says, what offense has happened? You are the mother of the entire universe. How can you possibly commit an offense to me? And he was thinking of the glories of Mother Sachi, and he fell into ecstasy, went into trance. And then the devotees say, okay, now's your chance. Go and get some dust from his lotus feet. Because while he's in full consciousness, that would never be permitted. So he said, okay, go and do that. And so she did. She went and took some dust from his lotus feet. And then she went into ecstasy. And such is the dealings between the Lord and his devotees. But on that occasion, at that time, Mahaprabhu was not happy with this mood. And so to set the example for the devotees, he said that even if it is my mother, she will not get any special favor if she offends a devotee. But apart from that, by and large, all other instances, the great affectionate ties of a mother and the son, Lord Chaitanya very much respected that. In fact, while he was at Puri, he said he was thinking of his mother, and he could see the anguish she was in. And in separation, she was still cooking all the items that he liked. And so he said that I go there myself. Even though I'm residing in here in Puri, here as a sannyasi, I still go regularly every day to the house of my mother. And so on one occasion, she'd made this big meal, big preparation for Lord Chaitanya. And then Lord Chaitanya went there. Of course, no one could see that. But he went there, and he ate everything. And then she looked at the plates, and she said, it's all empty, what's happened? She was in anxiety. She was thinking, has my deity eaten it? Has Gopal eaten it? And then she started thinking, no, this doesn't normally happen. Perhaps I forgot to cook it. And then she went inside the kitchen, and she saw all the pots were there, where all the cooking had taken place. And so she was completely confused, and she said, this is some miracle. So Lord Chaitanya said that internally she is appreciating my presence and she's perceiving my association, but externally she can't. Externally she doesn't know what's happening. So that's also an interesting dimension, that advanced devotees, they express different things externally to internally. And so we know the pastimes of the gopis in Vrindavan, how they're in great anguish of separation, great anxiety of separation. Great trauma, actually. It's a very troublesome situation that they express. Whenever visitors come, Akrura and others, they express great trauma great, even Balaram, when he goes later, he sees them all lamenting. But internally, some special connection is going on. But it's not always something that manifests so thoroughly in the person's persona. Rather, they act while they're playing this role of being in this bhoma of Vrindavan, in this material world. They act as if by the externals. That's interesting what the internal situation of a person is. Sometimes may be overridden by that person's own external senses. That doesn't mean it's not happening. Doesn't mean that the internal state, the internal meditation is not a reality or is some imagination. It's still actually real. So these are sentiments reserved for the advanced devotees, for the Supreme Lord, his expansions, and even his dear pure devotees. So for others, we can just think about them, meditate on them, and just feel a sort of a sense of deep appreciation that such a state of consciousness is possible. And one day, Lord Chaitanya might give it to us as well. After all, he has come to this world to distribute love of God freely. So his agenda is that everyone should be swimming in pure prema. They just have to qualify themselves gradually. They have to take the Lord's mercy. He's given his mercy in a form so that the most unqualified persons can actually derive benefit. But sometimes it seems we are even a stage further than that level of disqualification. That we don't even do the simple thing of actually just taking the mercy when it comes. So I'm speaking for myself, obviously. All of you are swimming in the love of ecstasy of Mahaprabhu. But one day I'm hoping that I'll be able to adopt some of those sentiments. And these sentiments are expressed here in this verse. Because following this instruction from Mother Sachi to go to Puri, the Lord doesn't directly just go to Puri. Several things happen along the way. So he's traveling and he goes to Ramuna, where this pastime took place of Shirchor Gopinath. And he hears this narration, he speaks this narration, Madhavendra Puri. And then he goes on to this temple. Ends up in Katak on the way to Puri, which is where he hears the narration of the Sakshi Gopal pastime. And that is something that was so amazing for all of them. And of course, Nityananda is there with him. So you can imagine what kind of a special pilgrimage that is. Lord Nityananda and Lord Chaitanya are traveling together. You can imagine it's also somewhat unpredictable. What's going to happen next? You've got Lord Nityananda, who's an avadhuta and who's always doing something unconventional. And you've got Lord Chaitanya, who has a tendency to fall into ecstasy at any moment. What is likely to happen? Well, it's one thing is guaranteed, it's an adventure. So here's now the start of the next adventure for the Lord. That Lord Nityananda has broken the danda, thrown it in the river, and Mahaprabhu is proceeding towards Jagannath Puri. They're all proceeding. And he sees in the distance this temple, the Jagannath temple. And as it said, he immediately became ecstatic. Just by seeing the temple, he became ecstatic. Because this temple and this region of Puri becomes Mahaprabhu's home for the last so many years of his life, last 24 years of his life. This place, Puri, becomes his home. And of course, for the first 6 of those years, he's traveling. He does different things. He goes to Vrindavan, he travels in South India. But then the last 18 years are his Gambhir pastimes, where, as I mentioned, he's expressing externally horrific emotions. It's a very pitiable sight. He's engaged in many ecstatic activities which seem very very scary, frightening to people, in terms of his own bodily transformations, his own ecstasies, his own crying and falling down and hurting himself when he falls. So this Puri, this entrance into Puri, this initial darshan of Puri is very significant. It is setting up the route for the next pastimes. And what do we see when he first sees the temple of Jagannath? He immediately becomes ecstatic and starts to dance. Nachite lagila. Starts to dance. And he offered obeisances to the temple, it said. After offering obeisances to the temple, he began to dance in the ecstasy of love of God. So this is one of the reasons why a grand temple is a good thing. Because it's visible from a long distance. And kings in the past would arrange large temples, large complexes, large places with big domes and things so that people would be attracted from all around. The bell would be rung so that people from all the surrounding areas would come when the aarti is about to be performed. And so it's nice. The Puri structure is a gigantic structure. But sometimes the effect of a gigantic structure is somewhat contrary. Sometimes it can give rise to envy in persons' hearts. So I think when we were discussing the pastime of Madhavendra Puri, we touched on the temple in Vrindavan. You know, the large temples and Aurangzeb and all of that, how he was seeing this beautiful temple in the distance. And he was annoyed by it. He was annoyed by the bell. He was annoyed by the light. So he sent his soldiers to knock it down. So a big structure also attracts envy. So therefore it's a tricky situation. Do we build a big temple or do we not build a big temple? Ultimately, you never win, whatever you do. but we need all combinations. We need nice, small hermitages. We need large temples to attract people. And they attract different types of people. Prabhupada said once, I can give class sitting under a tree, but how many of you will come and listen? So rather for the polished city dwellers, they need something more befitting. So they need a grand facility, a grand place where they can come. They can feel, this is a nice big place of an equivalent standard to the cathedrals and other places which are considered opulent. And so yes, this has some legitimacy. So this is how typically, or how often people will immediately judge something. But if you show them some shack in the forest and say, this is where the great sages live, they'll offer their obeisances and then they'll go. They won't hang around much to listen to Harikatha too much. So therefore you need different facilities, different arrangements for different people. But each comes with its own difficulties. So as you can see in this verse, in the purport, Prabhupada says that the Jagannath temple itself is now slightly different to how Mahaprabhu is describing it or how he was seeing it. And so he says, the small buildings surrounding the original temple had not been constructed, nor was the high platform in front of the temple present during the time of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So he is seeing something a little different. Of course, at this point, he's in the distance. And he's seeing that the dome, the structure. The Jagannath temple is an interesting structure because it's made entirely of stone. That's one of its features. No bricks or anything like that. And it's a stone structure. There is some disagreement about about the age of it. Prabhupada says, historians say this temple must have been constructed at least 2,000 years ago. Some say the present temple is about 1,000 years old, 1,000 to 1,500 years old. So these dates are a little difficult to pin down. Some things are not always entirely recorded accurately also in those days. But it's a grand structure. And obviously over time it's grown. It's grown to accommodate the needs of increasing pilgrims. And therefore different facilities, features have been built. They have a task of cooking for 50,000 people every day. That's quite a lot. And Jagannath Puri Prasadam is famous. All over these wood-fired stoves. And they typically don't use any spices. So seeing the kitchen is interesting. Now Mahaprabhu hasn't entered the temple yet, but he's just seeing the temple. And he's offered his obeisances to the temple. He's offered his obeisances to the structure, the building, the home of Lord Jagannath, the place of pilgrimage, Puri. So when we go on pilgrimage, we're also supposed to be in eager anticipation, eagerly anticipating the darshan of the Lord, eagerly anticipating being in the Lord's abode. And so one of the recommendations is that one should roll in the dust of the dham, just outside the dham, actually. Just before entering the dham, one should roll in the dust just outside the dham. So you might have to choose your points carefully. It can be a little difficult if you take a taxi from Calcutta Airport to Mayapur. You might have to choose a point to get out and do that if you want. You can ask ask the brothers what is a suitable spot for doing so. But if not, at least then as soon as you enter the Dham, then immediately roll in the dust. It's very, very powerful to take the dust of the Dham. This is the place where the saffron particles from Krishna are present. Those particles can give one pure love of God. And also they can give a person mercy from the residents, the basis, the dhambasis. That's very, very important. Because by getting the mercy of the residents, the bona fide residents of the dham, we have a chance to enter into the dham. So typically, as I mentioned before in a class, we also take the mercy of Lord Shiva. Different kshetrapals are there, different personalities who protect the dham. So there's Lord Shiva there in Vrindavan, Lord Shiva in Mayapur. So sometimes devotees, as they go on parikram, they will take darshan, offer obeisances to Lord Shiva in order to gain the mercy and gain some kind of lifting of this curtain. Lifting of this curtain that covers the Dham. Because the Dham is covered by a curtain. And most people appear there and they see the buildings, they see the concrete, they see the mayhem, they see the chaos, which will only increase as Kali Yuga goes on. But they cannot see the inner pastimes going on. They cannot see the fact that the place is pervaded by the mercy of the devotees. They cannot perceive the interactions going on. They cannot perceive how Krishna's energies are functioning there. So for that, one needs to have this curtain lifted. And that is a service which Lord Shiva does do if we approach him correctly. Now Mahaprabhu also visits the temples of Lord Shiva in this tour around as part of this whole episode of Puri and then going to South India. Mahaprabhu also does that. And so we can see how important it is to take the mercy of these persons in the right spirit, not seeing Lord Shiva as a demigod who will supply us with our will fulfill our desires for riches and opulence and fame and all of that, but rather seeing Lord Shiva as someone who can reveal the Dham, give us an entrance into bhakti, give us some special dose of spiritual sustenance. Lord Shiva himself is constantly meditating on the Supreme Lord, Sankarshan. Satvam vishuddham vasudeva shabditam yad iyate tatra pumana pavrita sattve chatasmin bhagavan vasudevo yadoksha jome namasa vidiyate. I am constantly meditating in pure sattva consciousness on the pastimes of the Lord. That is the sattvam vishuddham. Within that consciousness, Prabhupada explains that Vasudev consciousness is something that gives rise to Vasudev. Within that consciousness, the Lord appears, he manifests in that crystal clarity of that consciousness. That's Lord Shiva's status. That's what he does. So he's definitely capable of helping us if we approach him in that mood. But don't make him angry, because that could have other unfortunate consequences, as Daksha found out. And individuals from time to time find out what happens when they offend Lord Shiva. But Lord Shiva is very, very merciful. So what goes through devotees' minds when they approach a place of pilgrimage? Would anyone like to? Prasadam. Mahaprasadam, okay. The Mahaprasadam is one item. That seems to be a preoccupation for devotees all the time anyway. I wonder if it happens just when they go to the Holy Dham. what do you typically feel when you're on the coach, when you're on the train, when you're heading towards Vrindavan, when you're heading towards Puri? You feel ecstatic. That's nice. That's following in the footsteps of Mahaprabhu. You feel ecstatic. Yeah, you feel actually very, you feel privileged, isn't it? You feel that this is a special opportunity. Somehow I'm actually on my way to Vrindavan. And I don't deserve to be here, because Prabhupada says you cannot just buy a ticket to Vrindavan. But somehow I've got the ticket, I've gone through the customs checks, I've ended up here, I've somehow got myself onto a vehicle that's taking me to Vrindavan. Shri Shri Radha Gokulanand ki. And we're in eager anticipation of seeing the Lord. Whether it's Vrindavan, Mayapur or Puri. In eager anticipation. So one important item is that we feel privileged. We don't feel that we have a right to be there. We feel privileged and we feel ecstatic. Now sometimes that ecstasy is often mixed with a kind of a material inconvenience. Because that is typically accompanies any journeys, often in India. There's always some kind of inconvenience going on. Whether you're in a car, whether you're in a train, whether there's always something about to happen that's inconvenient. So I remember the first time I arrived in Vrindavan, I was in eager anticipation of seeing Vrindavan. And as soon as I got out of the coach, the first thing that hit me was the smell. I was almost knocked for six by the smell. Because I never quite smelled such a potent smell before. But still, what do? You adjust. You see this immediate onslaught to the senses. You still steady yourself. And you still think, I'm in Vrindavan. So immediately everyone got out and they were all offering their obeisances on the road. And of course all the Brajavasis are beeping, move out the way, move. But it's fun. There's that mixture. For any person going to see Vrindavan or Mayapur or Puri in modern times, you're going to have these two aspects. You're going to have the austerity aspect, the inconvenience aspect, the discomfort aspect. And you're also going to have this eager anticipation, ecstasy, gratitude, feeling great privilege. So don't worry, the austerity side disappears very soon after. As soon as you see the Lord, especially going to see Radha Shyama Sundar, most people just forget everything. they forget the austerities they've just gone through, the difficulties, everything. They're just there in the pure Krishna conscious atmosphere of the Lord's darshan. And if we're advanced, then we enter that darshan even before we've received that darshan. We're acting as if we've received that darshan, that anticipation, that ecstasy is all manifesting just on the approach. Because the mood of separation, heading towards sambhog, heading towards union, is very, very powerful. And it brings about an ecstasy which has a special quality. A special quality which isn't found within the actual phase of union, within the actual phase of being in front of the Lord. It's a very powerful feature. And when we hear that Mahaprabhu, this is what Mahaprabhu did, it gives us a sense that that is a very good way for us to approach the holy Dhamma, for us to adopt that mentality, for us to be singing and dancing in ecstasy of the Lord as we approach the holy name, the holy name, of course, but the holy Dham, the temple. Or an anticipation, what will I do there? What will I see there? What will I take? I'll take Mahaprasadam, but more importantly, what will I do there? What will I give there when I go? What will I offer to the Lord? Devotees journey from different places and come with gifts to present to the Lord. Maybe it's fruits. Maybe, depending on one's wealth, maybe it's a jewel. Maybe it's some contribution. Maybe it's a desire to serve the pilgrims. The mood of entering the Dham with the desire to serve is actually the most important part. Not so much the desire that I will take the Lord's mercy. The Lord's mercy already saturates the Dham and overflows actually. It pervades it and overflows. So just by going near, you're going to get the mercy. The real mercy comes when one serves the devotees who are dear to the Lord. Because they can make arrangements. In Mahaprabhu's pastimes, there are so many occasions when Mahaprabhu was disinterested in meeting someone or seeing someone. But the devotees encouraged him. The devotees made arrangements. The devotees somehow created situations where Mahaprabhu could meet this person, like King Prataparudra. Mahaprabhu tried to neglect so many times. But eventually it happened. And so we're about to launch into this whole section where Lord Chaitanya is in Puri and many ecstatic things happen. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya is the subject of the next chapter. Very interesting pastimes happen there. The Lord's eventual participation in Puri, in the Ratayatra. Then later on, the cleaning of the Gundicha temple. His dancing during Ratayatra. That itself is a spectacle. And it's described elaborately. How the Lord danced at Ratayatra. How he arranged the different kirtan groups. How he himself moved from different places. How he kept falling into ecstasy. That itself is a wonderful scene. And it's all starting at this point. This is the original darshan that the Lord is taking of Puri. He's fulfilling his mother's request. He's gone there. He's gone through different pastimes. He's taking darshan of Puri. He's in that eager anticipation. And soon those pastimes will manifest. So I don't know if there's anything more to add, really. Maybe I can take some questions. Yes, Ram Lakshman Prabhu.
Thank you very much for the wonderful talks. I was just thinking about this point that you were making, that Mahaprabhu, as he saw the temple,
And I was just thinking about, for us, that sometimes we might be swayed when we see someone and we think they are advanced, because some of these symptoms, these ecstatic symptoms, they're not always manifested in advanced devotees. Like we know Srila Prabhupada and Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, it's not something that they wanted to exhibit publicly. And that's not to say, just because they didn't display it, that they weren't advanced devotees. So the question is that how do we recognize, what else can we recognize to understand that this is an advanced devotee, apart from the ecstatic symptoms?
Yes, typically it's rare that you come across an advanced devotee just spontaneously or accidentally. Or randomly. In these pastimes of Mahaprabhu, it rarely happens that way, that one comes across an advanced devotee just by chance. Normally the reputation of the advanced devotee has been broadcast well in advance by other devotees. The way to get an advanced devotee is to hear about them from another devotee. When Srila Prabhupada, as Abhay Charan, met his spiritual master, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, it was one of his friends who said to him, "This sadhu has come." And Prabhupada said, "No, I'm not interested in hearing from these sadhus. I've heard from many of them, they don't impress me." And his friend said, "No, this is someone different. This is someone special. I think it's worth it if you go and listen to him. You'll gain something from it." So on his recommendation, Prabhupada went. So typically, all these arrangements are there. As we go into this section with Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, we'll hear how there's this whole interconnection of different devotees. They're all kind of aware of each other. This whole interaction takes place with Gopinathacharya, with Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, and they're recalling Jagannath Mishra, to whom they're connected to through friendship. And so when there are advanced devotees, other devotees will make us aware of those things. It's a feature. Why do we accept Krishna as the Lord? Why does Arjuna accept Krishna as the Lord? Asito devalo vyasaha swayam chaiva bravishime. Ahustvam Rishaya Sarve Deva Rishir Naradastata. That I accept you as the Supreme Lord because all these great persons do so. Asita, Devalo, Vyasa, Narad Muni. Because they have considered that you are the Supreme Lord, I also follow in their footsteps. So when Bhishma Dev says on the back, when he's about to pass away and he says, Eshavai tu Bhagavan Sakshat, Eshavai Bhagavan Sakshat. This person here is none other than Bhagavan. That is one strong recommendation, that here is Bhagavan. Because yes, you may see them and you simply won't detect it. Duryodhan had so much association from Krishna. Did he appreciate it? Did he detect it? Only on one occasion when he tried to grab Krishna in an assembly, he sent his soldiers to try to grab him, and Krishna displayed a form, and they all stepped back. And at that point he wondered, this Krishna might really be something. Apart from that, beyond that token of appreciation, he was thinking, who is this Krishna? He's my enemy. So, no benefit. And yes, of course, as Kali Yuga progresses, there will be many cheaters also. It's always a danger, so therefore we take recommendation. It all starts from somewhere. It's not by accident that we have met this group of devotees. It's not by accident that the person who introduced us to Krishna consciousness is the person we met. It's not by accident that we may have gone to so many other functions, societies, groups, organizations before that point, and we weren't overly impressed by them. This is all happening not because of our own intellect and reasoning or ability to discriminate. That ability is kind of mostly non-existent. This is happening because somehow Krishna has given us a chance. So ultimately our journey through devotees to other devotees, to other devotees, to Krishna, is actually being facilitated by Krishna himself. Because based upon our desires, based upon our behavior in previous lives, Krishna said, okay, this time I'm going to give him a chance. And this time, yes, he'll go to this group, that group, and he won't be impressed. It won't work. He won't be bewildered by the external things that go on, which others are swooning over, maybe. It will have no effect on him. But he will go here, and this person will touch his heart. The Vartma Pradakshika Guru will take him forward. So it's always like that. Then from that association, more awareness comes, you meet someone else. So when you go on pilgrimages, go with devotees. And those who you consider to be senior devotees at the moment, that you consider to be senior, ask them for their advice. Who do you recommend? If I go to Vrindavan, who should I go and see? Then that's the only way, because it's not going to be written down in a book. When you go to Vrindavan, there's not going to be a checklist. Go to see this Baba on this side of the river. He may have moved from there. He may have passed away, he may have ended his pastimes and gone back to Vrindavan. It's always going to be a dynamic thing. So you have to rely on the mercy of the Lord and try to prove ourselves to the Lord that we want that mercy. Prajna Prabhu?
This permission, you know, or access to go to Vrindavan, it's all permission, it seems. It happened to me once here. I was given free tickets. Somebody couldn't go, and it was Radhanath Swami's parakram of Vrindavan. And it was all paid for. Air tickets, the whole thing. He said, you can have it. You know, they were willing to transfer under my name. And I went to the management here, and they said, you can't go. We're too busy over this time, this period. And I thought, oh my God. I didn't really fight it, because I knew at that time, you know, it says, you know, and I'd had some difficulties in Vrindavan as well, anyway. And but all of a sudden, you know, everything laid on, but a ticket is not the way to get there. You have to have permission, whether it be through your immediate authority or whatever. And that I was really shattered, you know. But I had to accept it.
Yeah.
You know. So it was, that
Thank
was
you.
A
ticket,
permission.
The ticket may be necessary sometimes, most of the time, but not always sufficient. Something else is required. You ladies? Sam?
Thank you, Prabhu, for the class. I was just on this topic of association of devotees. I was wondering, because we hear that it's not by accident, so we need a certain amount of, like, I don't know, credits or something to be fortunate enough to have the association. So what's also the balance of then the causeless mercy of the advanced devotees when they decide to give their association?
Mm. Well, it's not so much... If I said pious credits will... I don't think I quite said that. But pious credits are not the requirement or the basis by which we get devotional service. But our previous dealings, I should say, our previous mental state. See, the desire to come to Krishna comes at a point when a person has started to have a little bit enough of the material energy. And that could have developed in previous lifetimes. The tendency that this is not quite all there is. I want something more than this. That itself you could consider, I'm sort of considering it as a type of progress, a type of piety, maybe a type of sukriti, some kind of progress. But what happens from that state is definitely all causeless mercy. Sometimes it could be causeless mercy that triggers the start that lets you get into that state in the first place. How it happens is very difficult. On the one hand, we need permission before we can approach anyone. Sometimes you may approach someone and it may be the right person. Sometimes the arrangement may have been made by the Lord. Sometimes someone else may have made the arrangement. Sometimes other devotees might have made the arrangement. Because devotees look around and they're compassionate. They think, here is a person suffering in material life. Let me try to make some arrangement to help this person come into contact with a devotee. The Lord's agents are all acting. And they're more merciful than the Lord, generally. They will act and do things that the Lord will only give you entrance into much later. So it's not really a balance. It is the only thing that actually takes us forward, the mercy of the Lord. And other aspects may help or facilitate that. For example, mode of goodness dealings, the dealings of humility, are typically not practiced by impious persons. So in that sense, there is an overlap. When you have Sanatan Rupa Goswamis approaching the Lord, clutching a straw between their teeth, these are refined behaviors which are done by persons who are already quite advanced. You typically don't find the ruffians doing that. So in that sense, you could say the person is situated in has a higher piety level. If a person is in the association of devotees, but they're harsh, they're manipulative, they're constantly trying to... They're behaving in ways which are not good. Such a person typically won't hang around long. If they do hang around, yes, they might promote themselves, name, fame, distinction, throw their weight around a little, act as if they're some authority. This might happen. Krishna will pretty much remove them. You can't stay for too long doing that. But if someone is a little more pious and they know dealings, etiquette, they're likely to stay in the association of devotees and not make offenses. So mode of goodness, characteristics, behaviors, refined dealings, you could say are linked to piety. But then the actual chance to progress does not depend on piety. Depends on the Lord's mercy. And of course, sometimes people's conditioning is so heavy that when a chance comes, they don't take it. So once I remember we were doing Harinam in Cambridge, and there was this old disabled guy in a wheelchair. And as the Harinam party went by, the devotees are naturally singing, dancing, happy. This guy was throwing bits of meat at the Harinam party. He had some bones and things. Well, I don't know where he got them from, but whatever it was disgusting. He was throwing them at us. I'm thinking, here is a person who is materially in a kind of impoverished state, and now he's doing something that's simply going to perpetuate that more and more. How unfortunate. Here is his chance to make a break from it. Here's his chance to take his situation, which is already deplorable, not desirable, and he's taking the opportunity that the Lord has sent him, hearing the holy name, and this is his reaction. So sometimes a person's conditioning in this world through their dealings, through their association, makes them unfit to take the causeless mercy when it comes to them. So it's kind of both aspects, but they both work in different ways. So that's why we learn, when we finally get a chance to come to the temple, we learn dealings. We learn how we should deal with the devotees. We learn how we should deal with senior devotees, who are maybe 10, 15, 20 years our senior. We learn how to treat them. We know we don't talk to them, give them orders, as if we're dealing with our friends. All of these subtle etiquettes are kind of obvious to a refined person, but they're not obvious to some people. So you have interesting situations created by that. But it's a path of progress. So all the devotees are also merciful, that they know people come here with many rough edges. So they also tolerate. They also tolerate. So yeah, many dimensions are there. But ultimately it comes from, does the Lord want us to be part of his party? Is he happy for us to be there? Does he want to give us the chance of associating with his devotees? That's his choice. Can you ask Prabhu?
The more you're in the light, you get the sun rays, you know. But some people are like the owl, they don't like the sun. Mm. Isn't it? Mm. So that's the art, you have to be in the sun rays. Be those who are part of the sun rays. And this way get purified and you... Yes. Part of the mercy, isn't it?
Krishna Surya Sama, Maya Andhakar. Isn't it? Krishna is light. Maya is darkness. Where there is Godhead, there is no... It says on the strap line for the BTG, where there is Godhead, there is no nescience. Yes, if you stay in nescience, you adopt the effects of nescience. You stay in the light, stay in Krishna, stay in pure dealings, stay in respectful dealings, then and what loss is there? Zero loss. That's Krishna's plan. Okay, the persons who you may be around, who you are being asked to deal with respectfully, you might think, okay, they're not qualified. But then if you actually assume that they're Krishna's servants and still deal with them nicely, then one day in the future Krishna will give us people who are more qualified. We have to show Krishna that we deserve the association of qualified people. We want the best everything. We want the best temple president. We want the best management. We want the best whatever it is. But Krishna maybe is thinking, do you deserve that? Okay, I can give you the best thing. I can give you the best teachers, the best gurus, everyone. But do you deserve it? What is your connection to receive that? Parikshit Maharaj Shukadev Goswami, the best hearer, the best speaker. Not an accidental combination. All the great sages came to listen to Shukadeva Goswami. All the senior sages came. Narad Muni Vyasdev, his own teachers came to listen. And Parikshit Maharaj, a top king, who's given up everything, looks like a mendicant, is surrendering to this person. So that question is asked, how is it that these two opposite persons actually came together? That is Krishna's mercy. Krishna's mercy that they come together and something special happens. So, no situation should deviate us from our practice. That's the point. We should still carry on. Okay, anything else? Okay, Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita ki, Srila Prabhupada ki.